This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Generation Fusion. I'm your host Andrew, joined with my co-host Amanda.
Hello everybody, yes, I am the co-host.
And today is a very special episode because this is our 217th episode special, where the whole episode will be spoken in Pidgin.
Good.
English.
Yeah, go for it, Andrew, at that rate, yeah.
They'll get me cancelled, no.
Yeah, Andrew's just discovered some different languages.
I thought it was a joke, but no, the BBC say it's real.
It is real.
I know it's real.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, this episode we are talking about, would you believe it or not, for the 500th consecutive episode in a row, talking about the brass band.
Yes, that's right. Talking about the world-class soprano player.
He's New Zealand class, definitely.
No, it's here. A legend is the world-class soprano corner. It's a world-class soprano player, Colin Clark.
Oh.
Yeah.
See? I just assume that they're really good in New Zealand. They're just not necessarily.
No. No. There's actually quite a bit in here. Taupo trumpeter in demand in brand new career with Royal New Zealand Navy Band.
Yes, he's soprano.
Oh, but that's Aidan. Aidan West. We know Aidan.
That's Aidan West. Why are you going? This isn't about Aidan West, Mum.
Because a Navy trumpet player, petty officer musician Colin Clark, visited Taupo and worked with ordinary musician West. And he suggested that the New Zealand Navy Band would be a good option for him.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's a little connection there.
Aidan West is playing for us at Central Districts.
Yes. I never realised, so as you can tell, we met Colin Clark.
Yeah.
I didn't realise he played for North Shore.
Oh, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Well, it would make sense considering the only naval base in New Zealand is in Auckland, which is presumably where the Navy Band would also be based.
Well, yes.
Which is where North Shore, it's in North Shore in Auckland, is where the Navy base is.
Well, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Kind of weird that, like, New Zealand only has one Navy base and it's in Auckland.
It is pretty cool.
No, not cool, weird.
Oh, pretty weird. Okay, it's pretty
weird. You think an island nation would have more than one Navy base and might be in the capital.
Oh, there, I found a photo.
Yeah.
He's in the North Shore brass band, a life member, past musical director. So what we're talking about, we went and listened to a workshop that he presented on.
You listened, I played.
Yeah, I listened, you played. Being a soloist.
Yep.
Because Central District's solo competitions are coming up, and an invitation was put out to all the local brass bands and players that if they wanted some a workshop on how to improve your performance. And Colin Clark was taking it. Now, yeah. We've worked with Colin before.
I have.
I have too. I played Christmas carols with him.
Worked with?
Yeah.
I had a lesson with?
Yeah. Well, we know him. You yeah. probably know him more than I do, but I'm not going to take away my credits there. And so you're the one who's doing the solo, but I came along because I like to learn stuff. And I did learn stuff.
No, it's because you're a sucker.
Yeah, okay. But I also learned something.
I am too.
And I learned something and you learned something. And I think that's probably the most important thing is that you learn something. But you got to be the demonstration.
Guinea pig. Hey, lucky.
Yes, so.
And I was going to play a different solo, but I couldn't find it until after, which was weird.
It was, because it was right there on top.
It was right there on top.
And I'd helped Andrew look for it.
But I ended up playing a solo I played a year ago.
Yes, and hadn't looked at. And funny enough, that's the one that Colin Clark had looked at with you, wasn't it?
No.
No. What did you?
I didn't look at solos with him. Did I? No.
You did what? You did conducting, didn't you?
And a lesson on high notes.
High notes, that's right. I had to think back. It was Christmas. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so it was really interesting, and it was good because and we were able to ask – it was because he's been a judge, an adjudicator.
Yeah.
So it's good to get the opinion of – all the judges are different.
Oh, do you know why it's also good?
Why?
Because quite often a tuba is never judged by a tuba player.
No.
So it was good getting his input as a cornet, a soprano cornet player.
Exactly. And also hearing what a cornet player or soprano cornet player expects to hear from everybody as a judge, especially what they expect to hear in a slow melody.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because we haven't really talked to a judge about what they're looking for. And he raised some really good points.
And one thing that he said that actually makes sense but I didn't think of is if you look nervous, that also affects the presentation. And even if the judge is behind a screen, that still affects it.
Yes, that was really interesting because it affects the audience's response to you.
Which affects the judge's
feeling of what, because if at the end, because he talked about at the end, if you just rushed off stage quickly, everyone would be like, oh, a couple of claps and finish. But if you stood there and acknowledged the crowd and they all clapped, they'd go, oh, well, that must have been a good performance because they're still clapping.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah, actually, you don't think of those things because you think of the judge as being behind the curtain.
Yeah.
But it is quite true.
And I think that's where I'm lucky is I don't show that I'm nervous often.
No, and you've got such a big instrument you can't take off too fast.
Yeah.
But
there and was also it's been drilled into me that after a performance while the audience is clapping, you stand there, bow. Yes.
That's what we've been trained as a band players, is that we don't turn the page or do anything until the audience stops clapping.
And also, especially at my solo and nationals, I was like, I did this really well, and the audience is the biggest applause I've ever gotten. And I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah, it was good. I think another thing that was really interesting, because I don't come from a performance background like the brass band competitions. I only come from a royal school doing exams. And I hadn't thought of it, but he's right, because when you're doing the exams, they're testing you on your technique, they're testing you on your knowledge, they're testing you on that level.
Yeah.
But when you're doing a solo, the things that you're not strong at, choose a piece that doesn't accent that. So if you find it hard to play high notes, choose a piece that doesn't go high.
Well, that's the thing, is that's a line you have to walk. You need to walk, you need to pick a piece that does challenge you.
Yes.
But is an achievable challenge.
Yes. And it showcases the things that you're good at. So if you're good at playing long notes, well, then really ham up the long notes.
Mine is my range.
Yes. So
that's why all the solos I play go from low notes to high notes.
That's right. So I thought that was really interesting because I would have been like, oh, well, you've got to choose. Isn't that a bit easy? Shouldn't you choose something harder? Or, gosh, that was really hard. You know, do you have to play these really hard ones?
Because there's one thing is it may be easy, but sometimes easy is harder because you have to pull it off better.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Because sometimes if it's really technical and something, you can, if you're good, you can get away with stunning the
audience.
Well,
I think that's what he was alluding to, because when you do a air vary, there's lots of runs and things, and you can hide a lot of things behind runs. But when you're playing a slow melody, he said it's hard to hide.
Yeah.
And so in a slow melody, they're listening for the long notes and how long you can hold, because that indicates how much breath control you've got. And he was good because he was talking about in the slow melody when you're playing a long note, if like in your swan piece, it's like 11 beats, isn't it, for the long note?
Yeah.
He said,
I never hold it that long.
No, but it was interesting because he said, and he said he wouldn't, it's hard to expect a tuba to hold that long, but if you're playing a cornet, They'd expect you to hold it that long.
Also, I don't hold it that long just because when I get to the end, I'm like, I've gone to the end. I'm not going to count anymore.
I know.
I'll just hold it for how long I feel like.
But now that you know that they're going for how long you can hold the notes for, you might have a different perspective on it.
Because it's also more impressive if a tuba player can
hold it. And he was like, so when you're practicing it, hold the long notes for 15 beats so that when you come to play.
That was also to do with the fact that when you go and play in front of people during a solo.
And you're nervous.
And you're a bit short breathed.
Yes. You're used to holding it. But those are the things that he was talking about. And he was talking about the dynamics. So if the piece is loud or quiet, when you're at home, over practice the dynamics so that when you're performing and you're nervous, your natural thing to drop to is a piano.
And that, also another thing he talked about, which is what I've learned with doing solos, especially slow melodies, is there may be dynamics written, but it's more what the music is feeling like.
Yes.
Is the music faster? Is it slower? If it's faster, it might be louder.
Yes.
If it's going down, it might get quieter.
And I think one of the things he really helped for you and for me, because I didn't know, but you play a tuba and it's different to a cornet or a trumpet, was that musicality, which you were like, at Nationals, you were like, I did put in a lot of musicality.
This was the year I was able to work on the
musicality. And it annoyed you because you were like, I've tried so hard, and that was because they didn't give you any feedback. It was just a tick box.
Which the adjudicator said he didn't like either.
Yes. And
yeah, it was just a problem. There was 29 of us.
So. That's right. But Colin was really good at actually meaning what it meant. And like when you've got a slurred run, although they're meant to be legato and slurred, to put some dynamic in by, was it?
Not, you see, because the thing in the run, the whole thing isn't slurred.
No.
It's groups of two notes are slurred.
Yes. So
it would be da, 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 not da.
Yes, but he said take advantage of that and use, because in a slow piece, that is your chance to add a bit of speed in without being speedy.
Forward movement.
Forward movement. And by doing that, it adds some tonal colour. So it adds the musicality, which we didn't really understand so much, did we?
I was also surprised I was able to get those high notes after not warming up at all.
Yes, well, you've come a wee distance. So that was.
I'm really, just that good, you know.
Don't get smug. You know what they say.
I'm sorry, my mum's a trumpet player. It's in my blood.
Yeah. So those things were really helpful because I think it helped you go, oh, so that's what you mean.
One thing that did annoy me is the things he said I did work on with Keenan for the solo. And I do think that is what the adjudicator meant. But I think Colin kind of said that it needs to be emphasised more.
Yes, I think that's what he meant, was that, yes, technically you'd been doing it right, but what he said was overemphasise it.
Because I think that's another thing, is even though I played what was written, sometimes to play it musically you can't play what is written.
That's right, and you have to over-exaggerate some of the bits.
And that's why I'm glad Shirley is my piano player, because I didn't get away with that with my past two percussion accompanists who are brass band players, and I had to follow them. Whereas with Shirley, I can push and I can pull, and she may get confused, but she'll
recover. So it was a really good session. I did enjoy listening to him. He's a very easy person to listen to.
Yeah.
His stories are very practical. Yeah.
He also does have a benefit that he grew up with his dad playing B-flat bass, so he does kind of have an understanding of
bass.
And also being a musical director.
Yes.
Musical directors do have to have some understanding of most of the instruments.
Yes. So, but it was very, very interesting. As I said, I initially only went along because, well.
I wanted to go.
Andrew wanted me to.
No, but I wanted to go.
Yeah. But like most things that I end up having to do, I was actually really pleased I went.
And I learned.
I'm not going to go and do performances like the competitions because it's not my cup of tea.
You don't want to be in the Masters.
I don't. I've going to wait until I'm the only person in my 80 to 85 age group and then I'm going
to
do it.
I do hate to break it to you, Mum, but I think 80 to 85 is one of the most competitive.
Okay, 85 sections. To 90.
I think it's the older you get, the more competitive they get. Because it's because, Mum, the current 80 to 90-year-olds that are competing are the ones that were the old men in the trumpet sections of the NZSO when you were my age.
Yeah, but when I get there, they won't be there. No, it's not my jam.
No, I think this is my last year of solos as well.
I think you've used solos the way I used my Royal School exams, which was to pull your playing along, give you something to aim for and to improve. And I think it's done a really good job on that. And you've just got to decide, well, what am I doing them for? You might want to have a few years off and maybe go back later. But the tricky thing, I think, for you is because with the tuba, you're judged alongside all of the other brass instruments.
And then the problem becomes when I do become an adult, well, when I enter the Open next year, it is you're judged alongside other tubas. But the problem is the other B-flat basses in New Zealand are very good.
They are.
Like one of them was Lee Martin, who was tutor for the tubas at the secondary schools band a couple of years ago, and he was principal tuba of the army band, and he's principal tuba of D C grade that one our section.
Addington.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're professionals. They're playing all the time.
I mean, he was even named in the recent King's Birthday Honours. So, I mean, that's what I've got to go up with.
But I think also, though, I look at someone like Mark, who is a very accomplished tuba player. And when we hear a bit about Mark and his stories, he did all the junior competitions. He won his sections a number of times. And then he went on and played in the Open and said, right, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah,
I think it's that you go from having all of these opportunities to all of a sudden playing against, I think, professional musicians who, and especially professional cornet players or horn players who, it's so much easier with their instruments.
Because the people competing in the Open are people that are playing in the national band, are playing in the army band, navy band, things like that. So they are professional.
I mean, people like Harman Van Horn.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you were, if that was something you were passionate about, well, then you'd probably end up practicing for hours and hours and hours as part of your day. And if it was your job,
I think one day I will compete in an Open solo. But I definitely think that right now that would be a losing battle.
Yeah. Well, you've got so much to on your plate at the moment.
And anyway, I'm looking forward to auditioning for the National Youth Orchestra.
Yeah.
I'm more invested in that than I am doing solos when this is done.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Like, the reason I'm doing a solo at Central Districts is because the same solo I played at Nationals, I just know that I can win at Central Districts.
Oh, now, don't go there.
I have a chance.
I'm not trying to knock, you know, but I'm more pessimistic than optimistic.
I have a chance.
You have a chance. Let's put it, better chance.
Let's just say I had a chance last year, very good chance, and I did it very well last year. I came fifth last year.
Yep.
Which is a lot better than 12th.
Yeah. But that 12th was over the whole of New Zealand.
No, I'm talking about my first.
Oh, the year before.
First solo ever.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. So, no, I was really good. So I thoroughly
enjoyed. I'm aiming for top three.
Yep. So, it was a good opportunity to listen to Colin Clark. I think, again, he's got a great opportunity because he plays full time.
Yeah.
Music is his job.
He's also an experienced musician.
Yes. And I want to say this, that I think in many cases it's a lot easier for men than women to be able to without a break in their career of playing music. A lot of women end up taking the middle years when they're raising children and stuff off. It's probably changing more now as...
Because Colin Clark's been in the Navy band since 2001. That's over 20 years, so...
That's right.
Yeah.
And I stopped playing.
Yeah, and because the thing is, the Defence Force bands do have a semi-high turnover rate.
Yes, yeah. But no, it was very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Now we still have 5 more minutes, so keep talking.
I was waiting. I've been trying to tell Andrew he's got to give me a few more cues because he gets to see the time and I don't. But we can talk about Colin Clark. He came and worked with Mark afterwards as a conductor.
Yes.
So it was really interesting and I learned a few things from that as well.
I didn't pick up that was actually a sewing needle. I thought it just was a small baton, though. It was actually a sewing needle.
What, that Mark originally had?
Yeah, that Colin took off him.
Oh.
The yellow stick. Yeah. Yellow conducting baton. It was actually a sewing needle.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was just a joke about its size. No, it's an actual sewing needle he was using.
Oh. So after we'd listened to him, we had our usual Fielding Brass Band rehearsal. And Colin was working with Mark because Mark's a new conductor. And I found it really interesting because I like Mark's conducting style. I find him pretty easy to follow. But there were things that Colin picked up that made it even easier.
Yeah.
Especially, and I hadn't noticed it, but it's true. And I guess it seems a bit of a joke, but it seems to happen all the time to those, because I noticed Kian has done it a few times. When people are first starting off conducting, when they start to get a little lost or a bit panicky, they start conducting in circles.
Yeah.
So instead of the steady up, down and across that they do, you see them and they look like they're stirring a pot.
Well, you know how I avoid that?
How?
Because I still can't follow the score. So I just keep conducting until the song ends.
And I hadn't thought about it. And it's right. So as soon as you lose your concentration, it's like... I don't think I could conduct because I don't think I could do two things at once.
Yeah.
And conducting is quite tricky. And people, there's a difference between like conducting two.
Yeah.
And when they put a little hook into the two so you can see the swing up and the swing down, makes a huge difference to just an up-down, which doesn't give you any cueing.
One thing I have noticed, though, that I don't know if you've noticed, is that other conductors, but I've noticed it with Mark a bit, is that those flourishes do tend to slow down.
Yes.
So when we go slower, that is actually because those flourishes are a bit slower than the actual beating.
Yes.
So
that's why that's why they've got to get the practice because they've got to be able to put the flourish in at speed.
Yeah.
But you could say, well, they could cut the flourish off, but actually it's the flourish that gives the cue that we see because as players we don't watch the conductor conducting all of the beats. We watch for...
him out the corner of our eye.
Out of the corner
of
our eye.
So he has to do something that we can see out of the corner of our eye.
That's right. And when they swing it like a J shape, so they're like forming a J, you see the tail of the J in the corner of your eye and you know, oh, we're going back up for...
Because also the flourishes give you time to breathe before the next beat.
Yes.
So the flourish before the downbeat gives you time to breathe before he reaches the bottom where you're meant to be playing.
That's right.
And, in the tuba's case, you're meant to be playing before he even gets to the bottom.
And as I said, I've learnt very recently, only I think in the last 2 years.
Very recently.
Very, very recent. And it seems...
It's sarcasm. It's not very recent for me.
No, but it does. In all of my years of playing, 45 years of playing, I've only just realised in 2 years that... one starts at the bottom.
One starts at the bottom.
And all of a sudden, counting became so much easier.
Do you know why I never noticed that, though?
Why?
Because tubas are expected to be playing before it gets to the bottom.
Exactly. But you imagine how hard it is when you weren't terribly sure which was one.
Yeah, because when I first started, I thought one was at the top.
Yes, and I always thought one was at the top, which is why either I was coming in too soon, because I was playing before... we actually hit the first beat.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
But that is also fine because in orchestras that works because you're further away from the conductor.
Yeah, but doesn't work when you're a cornet.
And the brass band very close to the conductor in a small room.
But all of those things, and I think watching when the focus is off you and you can watch a conductor and a mentor,
yeah,
you pick up things as well. And you're like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. Or actually, all of a sudden, something's changed, which now you can actually follow the conductor. Whereas before, there was something that wasn't quite right, but you didn't know what, but all of a sudden it's been changed, it's fixed.
Yeah, well, wrap it up there, Mum. We're over time.
Oh.
Yeah, well, if you enjoyed this episode, you can go and listen to other episodes at facebook.com. No, you can't. You can go to npr.nz/show/fusion, or you can go to Spotify and search up Generation Fusion. Biggest posters were on Spotify. Have been for about 5 years.
Yep,
but,
some great episodes over there.
And if you want to get some behind-the-scenes content, you can go to Facebook and search up Generation Fusion, and you can also go to Instagram and search up Generation Fusion. And if you'd like to help us continue to make content and continue to make better content, you can go to givealittle.co.nz/org/NPR and donate as little or as much as you feel like. Thank you all for watching, and we will see you all next week.
Bye. Bye.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.